The Tom Woods Show, episode 1863.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, creating an online course can be an excellent way of establishing yourself as an authority. It's also a great first product. And if you know what you're doing, it can generate you some real smackers. But how do you do it? Well, I have a teensy-weensy bit of experience with online courses, and I've put together some material that takes you through step-by-step exactly what to do and then how to market that course so people find out about it and buy it. Get these free resources at tomwoods.com/makecourses. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here, joined today by Patrick Riesenover, who I would like to say is a documentary filmmaker, but he's so much more than that. He's also the producer of The Politically Incorrect Guide, the animated series featuring Michael Malice and me. If you haven't seen that yet, you're not on my newsletter list somehow. Check that out at pigseries.com. Pig stands for Politically Incorrect Guide, pigseries.com. He did excellent work on that. But today we're talking about Patrick's brand new film, They Say It Can't Be Done. In this film, he looks at four unbelievable innovations that you can't believe we have the technology for, but that are sitting there, and, well, let's just say that the brains behind them are struggling with regulators and regulation. And we can clearly see how these things are going to make our lives better, and they have to struggle to bring these ideas to reality on the scale that they would like to see. So with just leaving it at that, I'll introduce Patrick, and then we're going to peel away at some of this and let you in on what some of these are, because it's incredible. I didn't know any of this was being done either, but now you will. So Patrick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Well, I love this documentary. These are things I didn't know anything about. And of course, that's just what you're going for, that there are innovations on the verge of exploding that solve significant problems and are incredible, almost beyond our ability to imagine. But there is a theme running through this whole documentary. And that is, of course, that these particular innovators, like many other innovators, wind up dealing with the regulatory apparatus, which is usually, you know, these people are operating in 2021 and the regulatory apparatus is back in like 1977. And particularly when you're dealing with regulators in a brand new or semi-brand new industry, I'm not even sure. I remember somebody telling me, one of my friends who worked at he had a stationery or paper manufacturing business. And he said that OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health, came to his plant to look around and make sure he was complying with regulations. He said they were looking in all the wrong places. He said, I actually had to take them around and show them, this is where the danger could be, and here's what I've done against it, right? I had to tell them. So anyway, talk about this theme, first of all.
Yeah, well, you know, for us, the theme was something we discovered while making the film. We definitely started out with an idea that we wanted to focus on innovation and regulation and craft a film about that. But of course, you know, these are conceptual ideas. And so you can't really create a film that's good, in my view, just about conceptual ideas. You need to crack it down to a story. You need to crack it into something that, you know, resonates with a feeling and emotion or some like the inner experience. And so for us, that was optimism and pessimism. And you know, we really saw in regulation a sense of pessimism, a sense of people aren't going to do the right thing. New ideas and new innovations are going to create more problems than they solve. And you know, they're going to provide change, and change is bad. Versus an optimism, you know, which is the part of you, I think, that in seeing these innovations responds with wonder and awe at this idea that these innovators and engineers can create something never seen before, that there can be an epic problem of gigantic global proportions like global warming, and yet a group of human minds working in collaboration can generate a solution to such an enormous problem. And I think there's something within each of us that responds, you know, with the pessimism or an optimistic, you know, sensibility. And, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to make this film is that we feel like in the media and just broadly speaking, culturally, it seems that the pessimists are sort of winning, markets are looked at with suspicion, businesses are seen as you know, making the world worse rather than better. And that's just not really entirely true. And so in some ways, by highlighting some of the biggest problems that, you know, globally are faced by humankind, and then identifying innovators who have market-ready solutions, if they were allowed to deploy them, we can hopefully give people a sense of not only a reconnection to your inner optimism and belief in, you know, the positive capabilities of man, but also, you know, maybe a little bit of, you know, frustration at the tension there, at why these innovators are not able to bring, you know, from their imaginations, these solutions into being.
The one of the four that jumped out at me the most involves 3D printing human organs. I almost can't believe what I'm hearing. Can you explain that?
Yes. So, you know, we approached the film by starting with problems. So one of the problems we saw in the healthcare space, no matter, you know, what moral ideology people are coming to it with, is that, you know, it's very costly. And so, and the cost just seemed to rise and rise and rise, and there's lots of reasons for that. But the 3D printed organs could, you know, basically completely change the structure of our healthcare industry and bring costs down. And how they do that is the, you know, let's say you have a heart attack or you have, you know, some form of cancer and you're taken to the hospital. And then they can, you know, the doctors using this technology can take a sample of your cell. Then they grow it in a kind of amniotic fluid. They're currently using like bovine fetal fluid, though in our other story, Just Foods, they've now discovered a way to create this this amniotic fluid totally out of vegetables. And so they basically put the cell in, and then they have a structure that's made out of a resin. It's kind of a petrochemical product. And they print the structure. And then when the cells have grown and populated, they then replace the sort of bio ink that they would have made, the resin that they made the structure of your organ out of, and then they bioprint the cells onto the organ. And one of the fascinating things that they told us is that somehow it seems the cells know what to do. When they get onto the structure and they're together, they grow and form, you know, a liver, let's say. And then they eventually eat away the resin, and what you have is your own genetic liver, exactly like the one inside you, sitting outside you. And so they can print this liver and then surgically implant it in you, which then completely eliminates the organ wait list. But the bigger thing that was really amazing and fascinating to us was this idea that so much of our drug industry is built on treatment and not cures. But if you can go in and they can take a sample of your organ and print you a new organ, then maybe we really don't need to be spending so much money on treatments for conditions when we can simply eliminate them.
Again, I'm just speechless about this. That's absolutely incredible. Now, how close are they to being able to do this on a large scale?
Yeah, so now we get into the an important part of the theme of our film, the regulatory component. So as there's a bite in our film where one of the graduate students working at Wake Forest Center for Regenerative Medicine with Dr. Atala, who's the main character we feature, who, you know, was kind of a father progenitor of this research and approach. They can do skin, they can do bone, they can do hollow organs. So that covers a lot of the body. I think the things they cannot do yet are, you know, brain, heart, spinal cord, kidneys, but, you know, they're working on those things. But as for, you know, like, yeah, if you're burned or they can rip cartilage. So, you know, we in the film see them 3D printing the resin base of an ear, and then they, you know, can then print the biological material and just, you know, remove your ear. Let's say you're in a car accident, and then they just, you know, attach the ear and you are good as new. So this technology is available. It can be used now. It is being used now, but only in, you know, very, I suppose, like test trials. And it's very tough because these guys, there's really no regulatory regime when something is so new like this. So the government is actually sort of forcing them to, I mean, they're kind of crowbarred into two standards, right? Like one is drug, you know, because it's biological, and another is device, because they have that resin. So even though the resin would disappear, you know, they're still sort of having to fit into this regulatory regime that was not designed for what they're doing. So it makes the R&D incredibly expensive. It makes, you know, how do you test it? How do you prove it? It also really raises a big issue with our whole regulatory mechanism of approving new medical technology, because this is literally your ear, Tom. You know, so it doesn't make sense to have a trial of 10,000 people where we put your ear on them, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating. So I guess I have to interrupt myself here and ask, how did you find out about this? Because you found out about not one, but four really amazing teams of innovators solving difficult problems that I'd never heard of. How did you?
Well, we went looking. You know, I think that's one thing, right? You get up every day, you read the news, you think that somehow the news is giving you what's happening, but you know, there's billions of people on this planet, and every day they're doing things that you don't know about. And so, you know, I remember it was like global warming. Okay, it's a big deal. Lots of people are concerned about it. I know some people think that, like, oh, atmospheric carbon is good, but it seems, you know, we didn't really want to weigh in morally on, you know, that scientific question. For our standpoint, it's like, okay, well, this is a problem. So how do we find a solution? And so often it seems that our solutions are moral or political. You know, well, we just have to stop issuing, you know, carbon, you know, okay, well, we're going to stop everything down. We're going to use less energy. There's going to be less people. It's just the way it's got to be. We got to stop. And so it was kind of just a strange thought occurred that was, isn't there some engineer out there who's like thought about this? I mean, the engineers are always solving these problems, thinking about these things. Isn't there truly someone has thought about this? And then so, you know, we set about our research and Googling and looking into these communities and resources. And lo and behold, we found Klaus Lochner. And that was kind of the first one. And then thereafter, we just threw the biggest problems on the board that we could think of. And then we just started Googling to see who has been working on it. And we found many, many, many technologies that we, you know, were not even able to feature in the film. You know, we are developing a television show based on the film because, you know, we only have a 90-minute runtime, so we can only feature four of these stories. And, you know, to a certain extent, we're not even able to dive in as much as we would like on each one. But yeah, Tom, I mean, I my astonishment was the same as yours when I suddenly saw, oh my God, this works, and why have I never heard of it?
Yeah, I mean, same with me. So then meanwhile, you have people concerned about climate change and stuff. What is this plastic tree thing that I'm watching on my screen?
Yeah, so Klaus Lochner I think he's been involved. He's a, you know, he's like a physicist. So he's a, sort of the scholar, the academic. So he's been working on this problem a long time. And it was fascinating to hear him say, I was sitting at my desk and I realized that I had found this resin, this chemical compound, also made out of petrochemicals, that will, when wet, as it dries, it sucks carbon out of the air and attaches itself to it. And so he just was so shocked that he could, you know, passively take carbon out of the air. He said he did the calculations 20 different times that day because he didn't believe it. And yeah, so that's basically what he discovered. And then they set about building it. And so they've prototyped it. You see in the film an early prototype that they've used. And, you know, now really what they're doing is working on, you know, sort of getting the technology to the point where they can build a tree. Is a bit of a misnomer. I mean, you can build it in the form of a tree, but you really don't have to. It's actually more of a concept of a tree. So they're working on building these garbage can sized models that could then be shipped in shipping containers all over the world. And what it does is you set these things up. They would lower into kind of a water or sluice. They get wet. It then raises back up. It just sits there and dries and collects carbon. And then it goes back down into the water. And the carbon is offloaded from the water, again, passively. And they can then collect the carbon and store it. And the thing is you don't have to put them on the top of, you know, refineries or energy plants. You don't have to put them in cities where you want less carbon, because we're talking about atmospheric carbon, which is everywhere. So you actually could station, you know, a million of these, you know, devices. And then Klaus says 100 million would be what is needed in the middle of the Sahara Desert or in the middle of, you know, intercontinental Australia. And it would lower global atmospheric carbon levels. One of the things I found so fascinating about this too Tom, is almost like wherever you would stand and from a climate debate standpoint, right? We also know there are volcanoes, there are asteroid strikes, there are things that are not man-made that can raise carbon levels. And these things impact temperatures and, you know, our global weather system. So in some ways, you know, putting these devices out there give us more control over, you know, the climate period. There could be more or less carbon, and it to be something that we sort of regulate, not regulate in the governmental sense, but regulate in a sense of like what is best, and we actually have a dial. So that's a pretty amazing technology.
That is. So for each of these examples that we're talking about, you're saying, and your film is saying, that the innovators behind them are running into some kind of roadblocks. What do those look like?
Yeah, so the typical sort of, I suppose, like a libertarian or conservative, you know, idea that we would have expected, right, is that there's some evil regulator sitting behind a desk with a, you know, chewing on his fingernails, laughing at, you know, stopping these innovators or capitalist interests, large corporations from, you know, doing what they want. And what we found is that, you know, that's not really the case. You know, it's really more of a system. And what you have is, I think you kind of alluded to it in the intro, we have a regulatory system that was built and stacked upon going back to the early part of the 1900s. And it's just a patchwork. And then what happens, it's not a quilt, it's more like it's a crystalline structure. And so you just keep layering more and more and more on, and it gets brittle and it won't change. And it's very difficult to change. And so you have, you know, Congress often responding to pessimists or concerns of the public, and then they create a law, and then, you know, there's a regulatory agency that is then to enforce it. The regulatory agencies go on to, you know, create more rules on their own. And these things add up over time. And then when someone has a new idea that, you know, obviously 20 years before no one could have possibly imagined, you know, there's just not a fit. So for example, with Just Foods, we have the similar cell culture technology where you can take a single cell from a cow, best cow in the world, or chicken, and then you grow that cell in amniotic fluid. And then you, once they reach across a certain threshold where they have an amount, they can then print a steak or chicken. Now, why do they face such incredible regulatory barriers that they are not approved in the United States and were only recently approved in Singapore, the first place? Very sad that in Singapore we're going to see this technology and not in America. Very happy for Josh and the company. But, you know, it's, you know, America's supposed to be the place where we see that kind of thing. And, you know, and so basically it's not approved here. And so they cannot offer it for sale. It's actual meat. It's chemically, scientifically meat. But they don't even know who they would need to have approval from. Is it FDA? Is it USDA? FDA and USDA themselves argued over who was supposed to regulate it. So there's just not a clear pathway. And that's like the main issue.
Yeah. So because there isn't a clear pathway for the time being, the answer is just no, and you're in limbo?
Yes, no, you're in limbo. Exactly. Maybe at some point, right? And the one thing regulators and, you know, these government folks don't appreciate is you cannot remain in limbo forever in business.
Yeah, of course. So I was going to say these people need to get some publicity for what they're doing, but they've got your film now. Can't hurt, right? That's going to, I hope, go a long way to solving this problem. First of all, how do people get the film? Let's insert that right in the middle here.
Yeah, so the film is available on all platforms. We are distributed with a Gravitas in North America and Espresso Media internationally. So everybody's able to see the film. It came out on March 23rd. And you can go to our website, theysayitcan'tbedone.com, to, you know, find various means of watching it. But it should be on, you know, Apple TV, Xbox, PlayStation, Dish, Cox Communications, you know, wherever you have cable, you can buy or rent the film.
Now, you will see on the screen certain libertarian thinkers contextualizing what's going on, explaining, you know, the way we see the world and entrepreneurship and regulation and stuff like that. But it's overwhelmingly a story of these innovators, and it's a story of people who are outside our normal circles. This is not a documentary that features Dave Smith and Eric July and me. These are all people out there trying their best to make important contributions to mankind. and being stymied as they do that. What can you tell me about this Catalina Sea Ranch, which is yet another amazing project?
Yeah, so, the ocean is acidifying. There's plastic waste. There's all these problems. We're ruining and destroying the planet. Nothing can be done. Well, it turns out something can be done. And so these guys have envisioned ocean farming. 70% of the earth is covered by water. It's actually mostly vast deserts, in a sense. There's life in the Sahara and in deserts, and there's life in the ocean, but it's, in terms of the biodensity, these open seas are, they're deserts. And so the idea is, that these guys had, is to set up vast floating kelp farms. And when you have a farm where the kelp is floating, it is going to attract wildlife. You can then grow mussels or abalone or other, things they actually, you'll see, they just drop ropes and the mussels attach themselves to it, much as they would, ships. And then they can raise them up and harvest them. And so they can basically create these oases of life out in the middle of the open sea. And what does it do? It de-acidifies the ocean. It takes out the bad things because that's what kelp and mussels eat. And so they're filter feeders. So they clean the water. And I thought that was freaking incredible. Just imagining, that space view of Earth where you look down and you see the oceans and there's just these little squares, in the middle of the South Pacific where you have life out there. Yeah, so the Catalina Sea Ranch is, they went into bankruptcy following our film, in large part due to the ridiculous regulatory costs that were associated with, running and harvesting of the mussels. The good news is that there's two companies there. One is Primary Ocean, one is Catalina. And the Primary Ocean guys you see featured are definitely going strong with their kelp product. But they're not yet permitted to grow the kelp in off the shore of the United States. And so they are getting their kelp from Argentina and, in other places around the world where they are permitted to actually harvest it. And so they have many, many, many products, but their main product is they're using the kelp to create fertilizer that reduces the amount of water needed on like our conventional plants and also, improves yield and taste and a variety of other factors. But, it's just like a baby industry that could explode, pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. So my feeling about documentaries is that when people are done watching them, there should be some action item for them. They should want to do something instead of just saying, that was a great documentary. Now let me go do something totally irrelevant. I want to send them to a website. I want to encourage them to do something further. If people watch this film, are they going to be encouraged to do something further? And if so, what?
So our approach to documentary is, I was a philosophy major. So I believe you begin with a question and you go on a journey that leads you to deeper questions and deeper questions, and then should end with a final question that you never could have reached without, going on the journey. And the question ultimately is a question of wisdom and self-knowledge and what does it mean to be human? And so for us, we would love for people to watch the film. The film team, we spent, 2 years working on this. It's not just me that you're hearing, but a whole battery of, super talented people behind us. And the best thing for us, something that you labor on so long, is that people would give 2 hours of their time to watch it. And so for us, that's a big deal. And, we'll just ask that people watch and ask the questions and see if it changes you, if there's something about you that you can, adopt or bring in this optimism to look out at the world and look at news stories and consume things differently. I don't believe that we have a, action item, go call your congressman, because I don't think it would work. The system is so complicated. The issues are so big. There's no silver bullet. The main thing that we hope to accomplish is that when people watch the film, they just suddenly, ideally, would have the insight that humans are amazing and their imaginations are incredibly powerful. And there's no problem that we cannot solve if people are free and able to do so. And to the extent that you can empower other individuals with your actions, instead of restricting them in every phase of the ball game, that's something that you should do.
Hey, folks, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. And this is something that can improve your life within 24 hours from right now. Sometimes we look around at social media, everybody seems to have a perfect life. And those of us who struggle from time to time wonder if we're some kind of weird anomaly. And we better not speak up about that because everybody else is talking about their vacations and their great memories and their wonderful relationships. Well, that way of thinking is only going to cripple you. Instead, get to the root of what's interfering with your happiness at BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can have weekly video or phone sessions. You can send messages to each other, all from the comfort of your own home. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. And you can find people who can help you with depression or anxiety, which can be debilitating, or stress or family conflicts, all kinds of things you might be struggling with. They can help. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Well, I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/woods. I'm sure that people involved in these kinds of things are not really that eager to share their politics. In fact, trying to remember which one was really emphasizing that the FDA has a very important role to play. And I understand that, of course, they want to regulate, and that's perfectly normal and expect. And I thought, oh, okay. But were any of them, let's say, you don't have to name names, but off the air, were they just exasperated? Did you get a sense of what their worldview might be and whether their experiences might have affected it?
Yeah. Number one, I don't want to speak for any of them. So, guys, I won't. But I would say that, you know, listen, as an entrepreneur and a business owner, knowing that regulators and Congress and people are going to look at every word that you say and scrutinize it, you really don't have an incentive to come out and say, these guys are bad guys and this process is totally screwed up and it makes me, you know, fighting mad, because it could kind of come back to hurt you. I would say that there's certainly frustration. Because none of these guys, you always grew up, you read, you know, like Ayn Rand, you read like a bunch of these novels and you get this impression that capitalists are just greedy, money hungry people and everything that they think about is money. But the actual sense we had when we were dealing with these innovators is they just want to do something incredible. They want to help people, they want to solve problems, and they pour their energies into it. So, of course, there's frustration when you have something that you know works and you're not allowed to do it for reasons that are stupid and make no sense and are 20 to 40 years old, and there's no one who will listen to you and, you know, pull the lever so you can do it. So I think there's definitely a consciousness of that. And then, like I was saying earlier, you know, businesses cannot exist in limbo. You're burning capital. Your investors want payback. You're going to go bankrupt. And this thing that you have that could be incredible and do so much to help so many people and change the world is going to go away. It's not just automatic, you know, it's going to go away and then it'll never be. And that is, you know, unacceptable. And so I definitely think that whatever their politics, this is something present that they feel.
Yeah. The reason I was asking that is just that the crazy COVID stuff has, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes about a lot of things. I've gotten a lot of emails from people saying, I'm not kidding, using this exact language, I've been completely red-pilled by this COVID stuff. And I used to be a Democrat or whatever, and now I'm a daily listener of the Tom Woods Show. You would think that's got to be an outlier. It's one or two emails. I have a boatload of emails like that. So I just couldn't help asking if maybe, you know, what we're told in school about people in government who are selflessly out there pursuing the common good, then you actually encounter them in real life. You encounter the system in real life. It doesn't seem to correspond to that textbook model. Well, you know, what does that do to you mentally?
Yeah. No, I hear where you're coming from. And, you know, if my sentiments, there's a way of looking at these ideas, you know, from an analytical academic standpoint and seeing, you know, libertarian or ideas of liberty and, you know, free markets just purely in the abstract. But then there's also people who are out there living it every day. And for them, it's, you know, like I was in one panel where I heard a lawyer or actually a legal academic professor say, oh, well, you know, I don't understand why these businesses just don't plan for the regulation. You know, you just include it as a line item in your budget. And it just struck me that to a certain extent, I think that's the problem. People in our society have migrated to a point where they think everything is just ideas and that there's no felt real existence. Regulation for a business owner who's just trying to do good and obviously not trying to be nefarious, it's not a line item in the budget, it's fear. Fear that there's something out there that I haven't thought about, that there's someone who could come in and tell me everything I've done is wrong and find me, or, you know, all these people who I go raise money to have capital to do this research are not going to have jobs and they have kids and their families and I've sold them to come and work with me on this epic problem to do this epic thing. And somehow I would have missed something, or someone's going to come in and just tear it all down for no reason that we would have had no control over. That's what regulation is, that you experience from the creative side. And I just don't think there's self-awareness on that. And I think to the COVID experience, well, it really brings it home. It's not just an idea, is it? When we have to shut down our entire economy and change everything that we do. And so that lived experience is a very powerful force.
I think there's something misleadingly soothing to people about the word regulation, because they think that in contrast to regulation, there's chaos. Right. So regulation is going to give us basically what they imagine is wise people overseeing potential chaos. And you don't want chaos, do you? And you don't want unchecked greed. So therefore, we need regulation. I mean, are you saying you don't want regulation? They honestly think that that's just a home run of an argument, because to them, regulation simply means we have an economy that's harmonious, without radical ups and downs, without bubbles and busts. And I mean, I think that's the way they look at it. And also as people's safety. They think that without regulation, we'd all be eating poison food. We'd be dead in a ditch somewhere and this and that. They can't think of any alternative. They honestly think that's what's standing between us and an extremely undesirable society. So when you encounter the actual reality of regulation and that it's not quite as glamorous as all that, you know, well, it's a rude awakening, because nothing in American culture prepared you for it.
Right. I think too often, you know, when you have ideological thinking, you get caught on one side of the coin. You know, to me, I mean, just how I think of it is human beings are dualistic in nature. You know, I can be an optimist, I can be a pessimist, I can change in the same second. I can be an ordered being, I can be a chaotic being. You know, I can come in every day and make my coffee and sit down and work my 8 hours and then go to the gym and have a perfectly ordered life. But there's something missing there, isn't it? All the chaotic elements like love and children and new ideas and film and poetry and expectation and, you know, the imagination. Chaotic, perhaps, but it is part of you. And to the extent that you try to eliminate it, you are eliminating part of yourself. And so when we look out at our society and we decide everything needs to be ordered and perfect and, you know, follow the exact rules, we're missing something fundamental about human nature to our peril. It's a very dangerous thing to not know yourself and not really think of yourself as a whole and, you know, embrace the chaotic elements of your emotions and your imaginations in favor of just a lifeless order. And, that's another way of framing, I feel like, this regulation. You feel like it's mother's hands and it's protective, but there's a way that mother's hands can be overprotective and prevent you from experiences that are going to make you who you are.
Remind people again how they access this film.
So you can get the film on pretty much every platform, you know, Apple TV, any of your cable provider. It's available. We're in the phase where you can rent it or buy it. And I think June or July, we'll probably move over to a subscription options like Netflix or Hulu. So if you want to see the film right away, you can. You should be able to find it. They Say It Can't Be Done. You can also go to theysayitcan'tbedone.com to find out more about, you know, us and these innovators and innovations that we feature, and also, you know, where you can see the movie.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm going to link to that on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1863. And best of luck with it. I wonder if this is the kind of documentary, you know, the way you positioned it, does it mean that only right of center outlets are going to want to interview you for it because you're telling a story about regulation? Or can you just play up the innovation part of it? Like, hey, these are four really fascinating stories. I'm just curious about your marketing plan before we go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you right now, I mean, we didn't make this for libertarians in some ways. I mean, I feel like if you are a libertarian, you're really going to like it.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we really made this for people in the center and on the left. And that's because we chose our problems. You know, ocean acidification, global warming. These are things that perhaps libertarians and, you know, progressives might even disagree about as problems. But, you know, from our standpoint, we didn't want to get into that. We wanted to pick these problems without even addressing those questions and just say, okay, let's say this is a problem. How can we solve it? For example, we got into the Colorado Environmental Film Festival. I think that people on the left who are concerned about the problems that are in this film, this is a movie for them. Because I know that in their heart of hearts, they're incredibly passionate about, you know, these issues, and they want to see solutions, and they're very unhappy with, you know, the state of things. And so if you're on the left and you, you know, you see these issues, this is a great film for you to watch because it can maybe give you new pathways or ideas to help solve these problems that you care about.
Well, tell me again the website. I know it's just the name of it, but I'm going to trip over myself. Say the website one more time.
It is theysayitcan'tbedone.com.
Okay. So I'll also link to it on the show notes page. Thanks again, Patrick.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Really appreciate it.
All right, everybody. I want to tell you about civillydisobedient.us, brand new site created by one of my listeners. And if you're a libertarian like me, sometimes you just have to tell the world how you feel. Sometimes we do it on the internet, arguing with people. Sometimes maybe you keep your mouth shut, but some of us just can't seem to do that. And at civillydisobedient.us, you can get merch like t-shirts and other stuff that says things like, ask me about Murray Rothbard, or has Second Amendment themes on it, or COVID-1984, a bunch of great COVID designs also. All kinds of things that you're dying to get off your chest and differentiate yourself from everybody else in the world. Well, this is the way to do it. So check out civillydisobedient.us. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/1863. And of course, you can get a nice plug for a site you're thinking of creating. All you got to do is get your web hosting through me, and I'll give you some nice publicity and membership in my bloggers group where we help each other, as well as some tutorials to get you started. All this great stuff you can find out about at tomwoods.com/publicity. Let's see, what's coming up? Tomorrow, our old friend Gene Epstein returns to the show. So you know you're not going to miss that one, right? You got to listen to Gene Epstein. So stay tuned for 1864. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.